Hello, hello, and welcome back for the 26th Metroplexity Podcast, special Easter edition. This is Kinnick, also known as Landon Winkler. Hopefully we'll have a bunch of questions about candy and Easter eggs and people coming back from the dead. We'll be able to answer those vaguely or otherwise. I don't actually know if we have any questions about candy, Easter eggs, or people coming back from the dead, so we will see. First, we've got a batch from Aranoff. Are there ways to not die to the reflected wolf in the stand, fight, or run options? If not, well, I have three different options that all result in death from a design perspective. I think there's probably something more going on there than you're seeing, but I'd have to look at the encounter to know for sure. From a design perspective, though, there are a couple of reasons to have choices that don't necessarily lead to that appear to be dead ends that are actually dead ends. Part of it is that in choice encounters, I do my best. Sometimes it doesn't always go through, but I do my best to include the options that people would want to take. And I think that those are all, you know, valid options that people would want to take, so hey. And there's also assuming for a moment that they all did the same thing. Like, you don't want to have a option that's like die, and then an option that's like, you know, hold out the fish, and then like if you don't have the fish, just have an option that's die. That would be weird too. So sometimes, you know, you need to add a couple of choices structurally. The biggest one though is what I was talking about with having dead ends that are actually things that look like dead ends that are actually dead ends. So if everything that looks like a dead end isn't, like, it's just, you know, a barrier before the next bit of content, that, I think, is actually a very poor decision for this game. In some games, in a game that doesn't have any sort of, like, spading focus, right, any sort of mystery focus, I think that's okay, possibly even laudable, to just have options, to have anything that's a brick wall be overcomable. I think that with not having everything being intended to, you know, be discovered easily, having it be a rule that obstacles are just obstacles and not actual, like, walls is bad. So if you're in a choice encounter and you have an option there that doesn't seem to do anything, it becomes a question of, if, you know, every option that doesn't do anything actually does, you just need to finesse it right. You're stuck. Or at least a lot of people will be stuck. Insofar as, you know, you're looking at the option, and, okay, so as it stands, you know, with having some dead ends that are actually dead ends, you look at it, you're like, that seems like I should be able to get around it somehow. So you try some stuff. If it doesn't work, you can be like, okay, apparently, like, I can't. Apparently it's actually a dead end. If there aren't actual dead ends, there are a lot of people who will just, you know, laser focus in on there and get stuck. And, you know, some people will still do that. But with the amount of things that we have that are not discovered, and the, you know, intentionalness with which I seed those into the game, I think it would be a very poor idea to tell people, you know, like, oh, this looks terrible, that's a sign that there might be something there, is one thing. Like, but this looks terrible, so there's something there. You just have to find it. I think that's bad. So I hope that makes sense. Sorry, have a bit of a cough. And a whole lot of Benadryl in my system, so I apologize if I I was going to say, I apologize if I ramble incoherently, but that's sort of par for the course, isn't it? The two known wolf teeth in Craspable seem rather lackluster for having to go through the trouble of getting a fish and then, you know, having your hand bitten off. I object. You get the fish to get your hand bitten off. Wolf teeth's just gravy. One of them's weapon, no power bonuses, the other is a small bonus when unopposed, which reveals a wolf theme of sorts, so I do like that. I agree, I think that's a good thing for wolves. Is there something else these were missing? Incidentally, I believe there's also a third item yet to craft it. There are some missing, crafting, items, with Mir, but, before anybody goes through and just, you know, powers through the list of crafting components again, that's not... You won't find them that way. Or they'd already be found. And as far as the wolf tooth craftables that you have found, I think that they're both, I mean, useful for their own purposes. They're not useful for you, obviously, right? Because you're here ragging on them. I don't think that I would look at either of them and be like, this is a terrible item, I don't want to bother with this. Perhaps not, you know, worth pouring the effort into in run, unless you have, you know, a specific need for bunch of etheric defense, or, you know, need a good offhand, both of which, you know, aren't necessarily the most common things, which is fine. I don't have any particular problem with that. Each zone seems to have its own technique, covering a range of attack types, except for the one that would be missing as range attacks. am I just paranoid and seeing imaginary patterns where I want there to be one? I do tend to do a lot of cycles. I'm not sure if anyone else reads Mark Rosewater's posts. He's the lead designer on Magic the Gathering. He has a column every Monday that, among other things, talks a lot about stuff like cycles, which is what you're talking about there. And the mirror is very much built on cycles, so I think it's fair to infer that there is a technique related to summer. Obviously not quite as easy to find as the other three, apparently. I shouldn't even say apparently. It's definitely not as easy to find as the other three, so there's a lot more going on there, and hopefully people find it. I think it's pretty neat, but if not, no worries. What are your design opinions on morale? It seems to be used almost exclusively on limited-time content with little unearthly and one skill. Further, it's nearly useless in most situations, being less useful than other easily obtainable items and equivalent slots for most attack types. Why is it so limited in both availability and use? I think you're going down the wrong road there. I'm just going to answer the actual first question, because... I think you're going down the wrong road with the rest of the question. So, what are your design opinions on morale? Morale is intended as a bonus for items which are significant and, you know, cool, but would not otherwise directly impact, you know, your stats base. So, it's sort of like the larger cousin to the will bonus that you'll get on some of the early items. It's really most of what it comes down to. So, most of the stuff that it's on is rewards that are given to you that are not, you know, for, you know, being awesome, hence the morale, right? You know, here's your ribbon for being awesome, plus one morale. And that's its purpose, it's not supposed... it ends up being unlimited Khan content because of what it is, not because I specifically only want unlimited time content, if that makes sense. I think I think if you use etheric techniques, you won't get a lot of use out of morale, which is basically what you're saying with the rest of it. But not everybody does that. So there are a lot of places where morale can be more handy than, you know, a melee hat, which I'm pretty sure we don't have a melee power hat. So, you know, morale would be helpful in that slot, that sort of thing. Yeah, obviously, if you're using etheric, it's not going to do great things for you. What is your opinion on what subversion testing has developed into? This feels confrontational after the last question. I'm not honestly sure what you're asking. If there's something on the social side of things that's, you know, you're angry about, you'll have to tell me. Because the question sounds like that to me. I'm not sure if that's actually what you intended. As far as, like, the path it's taken, I'm pretty pleased with it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that people still haven't found yet, still haven't figured out. You know, I think that to some degree, people aren't... I feel that there are a lot of developments in, you know, strategy and, you know, usage and what they're doing that people have just not made a lot of jumps there. So there's still a lot of development that could unfurl in those designs. So what it looks like now isn't probably what it's going to look like in a year, even if I don't roll out another dollop of content to it. So I guess I'm interested watching it develop, but that's all it's doing right now. Ooze! Despite having this available for a second time and finding a new message, we still haven't managed to figure out what any of it means. I'm not sure what I'm actually asking, perhaps. I'm just hoping for some vague musings. Well, I mean, the messages, you know, aren't there for my health so much, right? So I would look into what the difference is there, why that's going on, and go from there. How much has trial here has impacted your development, both in ideas and time? I sort of talked about this a little bit when I took over there, and I think that it's actually proven to be quite true. I don't really run on time as far as design work goes. It's very much an energy-based thing. So it's not a question of like, oh, I have, you know, 3 hours tonight and I need to, you know, design whatever. I have 3 hours, you know, worth of design, 3 man hours of design that I'll get done. In practice, very, very, very rarely is time the actual restricting factor. It'll usually end up being like, I am excited about X, and X will get done, and then I will still have plenty of time for the rest of the night to do whatever. I feel like I've actually been getting more done on both than I would have gotten done on either alone, because I work better, you know. It's like, you know, I work on a project, get sort of like, go work on something else for a while, and having, you know, two things that I'm legitimately working on is helping out with that. It's like, if I, like, over the past couple of weeks I've done, you know, donation item for each game, and working on some skill stuff for Twilight Heroes, and some events there, and I've been working on Old Town here. And I've still had time on top of those things to, you know, screw around on the internet and, you know, read blogs and, you know, we watched New Hope, Star Wars Episode 4 last night. And, you know, I've read like 10 books in that same time span. So that might almost literally be true. I think it's like 7 books. I've been working my way through my library's collection of wild cards, which is very good. I'm going to totally go off on a tangent, and then I'll talk about ideas. It's really interesting. I read the first couple of Game of Thrones books, Song of Fire and Ice, I guess, technically. Because, you know, like, everyone's on the George R. R. Martin train. And I just did not like them. Which is a little weird. And I spent a lot of time thinking about it. Because, like, not like, because I'm second-guessing myself. It's like, if you don't like it, you don't like it. But, because, you know, I talk to a lot of people who like to talk about Game of Thrones. And I don't feel like being the guy who's like, I just don't like it. Because not because that's wrong, but just doesn't add a lot to the conversation, right? It's not exactly, you know, a stunning insight that, you know, one random person doesn't like this. But I actually spent a lot of time thinking about it, probably more than it was worth, but whatever. And I realized that, like, I just didn't like any of his characters. Like, they're very deep and interesting and intricate. But they're just all kind of jackasses. Or then, like, very, just very deeply flawed. Like, he basically has a cast of nothing but villains. Involve, like, villains and, like, NPCs, right? There's no PCs, in the whole thing. And I was like, huh. Like, okay. So, I explained this, you know, to a couple people. And, a while later, I'm reading, the Wild Cards role-playing supplement from Green Ronin, who do Mutants and Masterminds. So it's a setting for Mutants and Masterminds. And I'm reading the, you know, intro, and they're talking about how Wild Cards have been having a resurgence recently because George R. R. Martin edited it, so they're re-releasing all the books and be like, oh, by the guy who wrote the Game of Thrones. And of course, you know, they're selling like hotcakes, or comparatively selling like hotcakes. And so, but I was reading it, and they were talking about role-playing in Mr. Martin's, I'm not really sure, George's, whatever, game. I guess they just called him George in the text, so I'll go with that. So they're playing in George's game, and he... And it's this whole circle of writers that are playing. They're, you know, all of their work starts suffering because they're just talking about George's game all the time. And they're just like, you know, oh, what did we do last time? Did we screw this up? Like, what's our plan for, you know, going after these guys? Like, just constantly. And eventually they're like, okay, we either have to stop playing this game or have to figure out a way to make money out of it. Hence Wild Cards. Okay, but what I think is interesting about this, like, why I went on this entire tangent, is that, he's obviously, like, a really good GM, clearly, from, like, destroying people's, you know, lives, but I think that plays very interestingly into the problem that I had with Game of Thrones. So, like, it's just... Game of Thrones, it's gotten sort of shorthanded down to, like, the world where the PCs never show up for me. It's like all of the NPCs doing all of their NPC stuff, be it, you know, like, you know, legitimate and normal, or just, like, terrible. Like, slowly going into this PC-less death spiral that, you know, game worlds tend to go through, if you imagine them without the PCs. So, anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting. So I've been reading the Wild Card books. They were quite good. I've read all of the re-released ones. And I've been reading, Atrocity Archive and Jennifer Morgue, which are like Lovecraftian spy thriller meets Office Space, is the way I've been describing them, which is, I hesitate to say, like, good exactly, but, like, they hit sort of the sweet spot where, like, well, I work in Office Space, as, you know, many people do, and, like, Lovecraftian spy thriller, you just can't go wrong, really. Can't go wrong for me, right? So, yeah. But yeah, I've been reading a lot, been watching, you know, movies and, you know, various other DVDs of, like, old shows that, you know, I'm not going to watch on television, because screw television. So, like, my 3 hours a night, I might only end up, you know, having, like, quote, an hour, but if, you know, I code for half of that and get a bunch of stuff done, which I'm not sure if everyone works the way that I do, and I then just doesn't talk about it, or if I code really quickly, but, like, you know, I'll churn through, you know, an entire, like, chunk of a feature within, like, you know, my 30 minutes or my hour or whatever, and then, like, when I'm done winding down, I'm not going to get anything else done that night, so I just go and do something else. So, you know, but sometimes I'll bounce, you know, Metroplexity, Twilight Heroes, Metroplexity, and then, like, you know, go watch a movie or whatever. Anyway, so, I don't think the time thing has been a deal at all. It's been working out very much the way I expected. Ideas, there's, I mean, I think some limited, like, fingerprints that you'll see on both, but the idea transfer, I think, has, if anything, slowed. I mean, I wasn't really taking a lot of stuff from Twilight Heroes. I considered, actually, in the beginning, making it a little more similar with the, with it caring about time of day, but, like, time of day plus the eclipse sort of divvied everything into four and got, I think it detracted from the main point, so I didn't end up doing that. But, like, previously, if there was, like, this is a good idea, it could work pretty well in Twilight Heroes, but could make it work in Metroplexity, would mean that either the idea got shelved and just never got used, most likely, or it got sort of shoehorned into Metroplexity. Now I can just put it where it belongs. So, I think, if anything, they're diverging a little bit more. But I mean, you know, to some extent, like, Metroplexity has always had a little bit of dark humor, and Twilight Heroes has always had, like, you know, some elements that it shares with Metroplexity. So, it's not, I don't think they're obviously ever going to become completely dissimilar, but I feel like there's actually less idea transfer now, because certainly I can implement the same thing twice if I can help it, at least not in a row. So it just goes into the most appropriate area. Although, admittedly, there's some of their mall stuff that I'd like to remodel it a little bit, but to accept buy orders like we have in Metroplexity. I think that would help them out some. But, will there later be a possibility of removing cybernetics and keeping them, perhaps for fee, Old Town or somewhere? If not, what is the rationale behind making sure that all cybernetics are destroyed? Does it have something to do with not being able to have certain ones in inventory to begin with? I don't like cybernetics feeling too much like equipment, and I think that, I mean, there's a couple of places that we could have, you know, cut in there, but I think that's definitely one of them. I don't like just being able to, you know, swap back and forth. You know, there's the body cost there, but I think that them being destroyed on removal just makes them a lot more their own thing, I guess. Where they're, I mean, they're basically, I mean, in practice, just a, like a drug that keeps running until you want to turn it off, right? And yeah, it's not specifically because I don't want, you know, the experimental items getting kicked into your inventory, although it certainly made that less weird. Although, you know, going up and getting an experimental item and then, like, getting it removed and breaking it down for parts is kind of funny. I feel like it's more about just the way that I think cybernetics should feel. Like, they're not supposed to be reused in setting, and they really shouldn't be. They should be custom made for you. Obviously, the stuff that you have access to now is not, and a lot of, you know, things you'll cut out of people, but reusing cyberware is not normal for the setting at all. So that ended up being a good fit for making it different from equipment as well. Sir Ant of the Lake of Winter Raiding was not able to get there with 316 HP. If there is, there's not anything amazing waiting for you there. Probably just like, you are a winner! Like, some Will XP or something. It wouldn't surprise me if it was impossible to get there. At the very least, there isn't any... past a certain point, there isn't anything that you're going to want to go to. You should really just turn around and go back. If that helps at all. Probably not. How happy are you with the changes to gang warfare? Pretty happy. People seem pretty pleased with it. I mean, it's... I mean, they're sort of like the two halves to it. Obviously, we've got the fortifications, which I think are a good addition, and seem to be working pretty well for people, and the change to actually have to patrol in one area, which should have gone in, as I mentioned in the last podcast, like 2 years ago, and I just wished out, basically. So, glad to have that off my to-do list, and glad that we got in the fortifications. I think those are pretty cool. What do you think about a progress helmet of great spelunking? Trying to get a sense here of how fast or thorough you normally expect debating on these sorts of things to progress. I mean, I don't really expect too much, exactly. Which isn't to say, like, you're all terrible, I don't expect good things from you. I just don't usually really map it out in my head as I'm going. For the most part, like, usually when I release an item, most of the functionality gets figured out pretty quickly. Then there are some holdouts. Cloak of Feathers is an example of that not happening. That took quite a while to get even the basic stuff figured out. And some things like, that's probably the best example. But I've not been particularly shocked by what's been found out or not found out yet. It's, I would say, about on track. Thanks for putting up my barrage of questions. You are welcome. We've got another big batch from Al. Yeah, podcast time. Sorry if it's a lot of questions. They've been building up. Well, that's all right. What gives metallic powder its special properties? Type of metal? Type of processing? I mean, composition, if that makes sense, probably makes sense. I mean, it's not how it's, you know... Type of processing just sounds sounds weird to me from like a chemical perspective, right? But I mean, most of the types of processing that we're talking about would change what type of metal it is, right? Like, you know, you'd end up like with an alloy or what have you, or you know, galvanize it or blah 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 blah. It's so, type of metal, but only because I don't see a real serious distinction there. But, I mean, it's a... Yeah, I guess I shouldn't get too deep into that. Should reactive defense always reduce damage by the same amount? I get consistent results if I test something a dozen times in a day, then go back a week later and get a different number, most often 7 versus 8 damage. Is there a formula we should be looking for reactive? I mean, there obviously is a formula, right? And I would hazard a guess, based on your results, that there is a variable in the formula that you're not accounting for. So, that would be my guess. But yeah, I don't believe there's a random term in there at all. I mean, obviously, like, the initial damage is random, right? I don't think that there's an additional random term added by reactive defense. Pretty sure. And that would be pretty weird with your results, too, if it was actually random and you're just getting weird lucky. Would you be willing to tell us how many shorted TV messages there are? Let's see. There are... depends a lot on how you count them. You could say anything between, like, 25 and 40-ish, and be right for some values of right. There are quite a few. What about how many neurocorting memories of previous life there are? Considering how long they've been in the game, I assume we found them all, but Barton 26 discovered a new one just recently. I would assume they have them all, but, I mean, obviously... would have assumed that earlier, too. For what it's worth, I didn't add anything recently to those, so just a question of it being sneaky. But I think I'll keep my lips shut on that half, because I don't want to go digging around the script to see how many there are in half, because, eh, you know, mystery. The old Mesh Man Nance is drawing a Midgard logo in the dirt. What does this exactly look like? Is it the same as Midgard Player? Is the standard Omnitech logo the same O with a T that we've seen in the guest catalog? The Midgard logo is... the most common form of it is what's displayed on their... the Midgard Defender, the anti-hacking enemy, it's the same sort of pattern as on the Midgard Player. That sort of oscilloscope M is the main Midgard logo, but it'll usually it'll be worked around whatever it's on. Like, if you have a Midgard building, there'll usually be like a line with the logo in it that's going around the building, or like a one logo on each side of the building type thing, but like one constant line through. And then with, you know, you've seen obviously the player and their defender. I believe there's a hat around with it on too, though that may not be as clear, just because of the nature of hats. And the standard Omnitech logo is the O with the G in it that you've seen. It also shows up a couple of other places. the Learn Top and the Cola can, I believe. And it'll show up a couple more as you run into more Omnitech people. They're pretty level happy. Is there any way to get Spectral Damsel's Parasol Block Technique? Seems like we should be able to use the Gauzy Parasol somehow, but I can't find anything. That seems relatively reasonable. I believe that there are two or three undiscovered techniques down in the abandoned subway. There's quite a bit going on down there, as I'm sure has been noticed. The Gold Game didn't seem interested in Royal Orbit at all. Wrong area to be barking up for finding more survivor skills. Certainly not a bug. These is not interested in it. So, I guess take that as you will. Not really his cup of tea. How did the virus choose which sites it targeted? Largely random. I mean, obviously there were restrictions on it, like, you know, it had to be ripe for the picking, so to speak. You know, it had to not be infected already, and so forth. Which came first, Roy's One Stop for Software, or Roy's Secret Sauce? Roy's One Stop for Software. I was waited to see the final boss, so to speak, and then got the item named appropriately. What's the vague answer to direct answer ratio? I'm feeling 1-to-1, maybe. Maybe like 5-to-1. It really depends. I feel like it's kind of like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, right? As you expend more energy to try and, like, nail down the answer, other parts of the answer just sort of fuzz away. So, I mean, if you ask, like, a broad, vagable question, I mean, like, you might get a direct answer sort of by accident. But if you ask a very direct question, you may not even get an answer. So, you know, velocity, position, however you want to work those into the metaphor. I was going to ask about the mysterious Hunger Ooze messages, but Aneroth beat me to it. What makes the massive stone talent so special that it gets its own message when eaten? It doesn't. there's nothing even remotely about the massive stone talent in the Hunger Ooze code. Certainly have not updated it since the talent went in. Are the feeding messages key to unlocking missing stuff from the ooze, or do we need to find missing stuff before the feeding messages make sense? Yes. Yeah, that's not really there's not really a chicken or egg there. I would say that if you understood what the messages were trying to tell you, you would have some good leads on finding the stuff. About Feather Chains and Feather Cloak, is doing the same feather twice in a row important? It gives a different message to Instroke, but doesn't seem to ever lead to anything. I mean, even if it doesn't have its own chain, I mean, there are still places where it's functionally important, yeah. I mean, it may not even be functionally important in a way that's good, but you'll want to know in a lot of cases. How's old time going? Not too rush you, sound impatient, just curious and excited. Been working on it. The sort of the bones are in, like if, you know, I screwed something up really badly in the code, you could, you know, take the Metros to Old Town, that sort of thing. The quest areas are going in now. I've got sort of one path through the first quest area mostly done, so we've still got a while to go. I'm really happy with the design. I think that'll work out pretty well. There's some really cool stuff going on there. So, that's neat. And the I think people will really enjoy the new areas that go in the new quest section. To say nothing of the story tidbits, because obviously you're going there for, I mean, in-world, you're going there for juicy story tidbits, right? I think it's coming along nicely, but definitely still a ways off. Thanks so much. You are welcome. Batch from Penguin Pyro. Totally new to podcast, so forgive me if these are duplicate/inappropriate questions. I don't think you'll have too many problems. How accurate would you say the remaining secrets waiting on the Unearthly Item Buying Guide page are? Let me take a look. I think the only one that jumps out and bites me in the face is Ragman's Cape, but I think that just hasn't been updated since stuff was found, is my guess. So, yeah. I would bet that just hasn't been updated. And, I mean, there's some stuff where it's like, the question marks might mean, how does this work mechanically versus how does this work, versus there's actually, like, missing content. So, you'll have that. Would it bug/disappoint you if several years in the future, some of the cool stuff you put in now isn't even close to being discovered? No, actually not at all. That's sort of a, almost a design goal. Insofar as, I mean, obviously, like, we're not gonna put in content and leave it in, like, a time vault, right? That, like, oh, this can't be found for 5 years. That's dumb. But putting in, enough content and enough diversity of content, enough neat hidden things that even with, people poking at it constantly, not all of it falls out, right? There's stuff from, like, the original PvP launch. There's stuff, a bunch of stuff from the Survivor's Quest, Second Goal Quest, etc. And some of that stuff's pretty major, that people haven't found yet. And I would like to see that carry forward, and have, if you sign up in, 5 years, still be able to find stuff that's been, unfound for a long time. I think that would be super cool. And it seems to be working out so far, okay. Any clue as to hints for fishing mechanics? Namely, the difference between fishing yield and fishing modifier. Well, fishing modifier boosts your effective rank. I don't recall exactly what the mechanics are. But those two do totally different things. If you came to an area with, what I would suggest is get your fishing skill pretty high, and then go somewhere really easy to fish, like the docks, and see what happens as you adjust fishing modifier, and see what happens as you adjust fishing yield. In practice, the fishing, they're just going in completely different directions. But yeah, the fishing modifier modifies your actual fishing rank in one way or another. And the fishing yield actually increases the number of bites, if you will. The number of hooks is probably the best way for to say it. Actually, I think it uses that metaphor directly in one of the items from the tackle box. There we go. I've been suspecting there's an inverse relation between an item's combat bonuses compared to items that are similar after to obtain, and its abilities to teach new techniques. Less optimal equals something hidden. How true would you say that is? Well, it's a little bit... It sort of speaks to the same thing that I was talking about with encounters, way up top. In that... some... things are just bad because they have to be bad, right? Or because, like, that's... Or because, you know, I find it amusing for them to be bad. Or because... everything that's bad having a secret is means that they're not really secrets, right? but I would say that overall, you're not barking up the wrong tree at all. It's not a hard and fast rule, though, is all I'm trying to say, so don't be like, oh, this glass bottle clearly has something cool going on. It's like, eh, not so much. Any reason I slank slab less than walk around willy-nilly with my hall pass, even when I'm murdering guards and scientists left, right, and center? Security in the slank slab is extremely lax compared to the other Midgard facilities that you'll run into. Largely because, like, who the hell would go there, right? I mean... possible, like, for world building's sake, like, there should probably be a counter in there, but it would be large enough that you wouldn't hit it very often. Like, that's, it's not a complete oversight so much as a, like, you can get pretty genocidal in there before it starts mattering. I might do something about it after I fix the slags gate, but that's actually the one that's way weirder at this point. Because you really should be able to clear out the guards there, and it just doesn't work that way right now. Yeah, it's not coincidence that the slags lab is by far the least secure of the Midgard facilities, just because they have no reason to be secure, really. Like, who's going to break into the slags and go, like, invade their facility? Not many. Not many people at all. And there's... not everyone there is necessarily a... well-adjusted. Any backstory relationships between the Cloak of Feathers, the Ragman's Cape, and the Raven that MSO Thrivaldi mentioned? All related to, you know, ravens. In a very distant way, yes. But I guess I would be surprised if I found the raven that Thrivaldi is talking about picking at the Ragman's eyes. Like, that seems unlikely to me. yeah, not sure that would be high on the raven's priority list. But there's sort of a... I wish you could see this hand gesture, because it totally explains what I'm talking about. By explains, I mean does not help explain at all. Yeah, there's sort of a connection if you dig back far enough. Does directly using the burning ectoplasm do anything useful, or are third-degree burns just for flavor? Well, you know, who knows when you might need a third-degree burn, right? It's important. Why does a baseball bat with stuff written into it cost as much as a smuggled-in high-tech rifle? Taking a step back from there, I mean, the KZRs are not super expensive, is one important part, but, KZRs are totally knockoffs, but, what you're buying there, I mean, it's like going and buying, you know, a pair of Nikes. Actually, that might be closer to the metaphor than I necessarily even like, at least, you know, a couple of years ago when we were growing up. When I was growing up, at least I can't speak to anyone else's age. Where what you're buying isn't the bat or the rifle. What you're buying is sort of the image associated with it. And that the image And I think that that's, you know, accurate even when we're talking about, like, the in-game, right? Like, you're not buying that bat or that rifle because they're, you know, because the KZR is a needler, right? Like, that's not, at least certainly when I get one, it's that's not why. What you're getting them for is because of the image and because it marks you as, you know, a hardcore gang warrior. Similarly with gang decks, I mean, an actual leather jacket, it's really expensive now, but part of the demand for that is ganger, right? Have you met any of Matsuhin Slayer's enemies other than the Ragman / Ultimate Ragman? If not, will that be part of future content? Keep in mind for a moment that Matsuo Demon Slayer is not real. I mean, even in world, you know, he is just a TV show, a very very popular long running TV show, but a TV show. So there's that. But it at the same time would not entirely surprise me if you ran into some other people from his list for a wide variety of reasons. Alright, moving on, we've got a couple questions from Velmo. I've listened to a number of podcasts, figure this time I'll throw some questions your way. Well, thanks for listening, thanks for throwing things at me. Not really throwing things at me, but you know what I mean. To get this ball rolling, I'm curious about the Ragman's cape. With the discovery of the limited effect removal of the clean rags and his ultimate four, how much still needs to be spaded? It's fairly sealed up. I mean, those were the ultimate form, the technique associated with that, and the clean rags effect were the major outstanding things. So if I were spading, sleuthing, I would say that you could, unless you're really, you know, like trying to fill in the edges, you're probably okay. Moving on to some other item. Next there's Red Lens Goggles. Way back in podcast 12, you indicated that there are two things remaining to be found. I'm going to go ahead and assume that the easy but not encouraged part is the two considered techniques, which leaves the buried part. I'm just wondering if you'd be willing to give a small clue, or is part of what it requires obvious? I think you would... I don't think it would surprise people... Well, I guess it requires a couple of different things. But each part of the way you get, there is some feedback. It's just very subtle. So not even like, you know, second paragraph changing the text, subtle, like, subtle. And once you've got those lined up, you're on the right track, so to speak. good luck will be coming your way. But... Yeah, you'll just have to be looking in the right place to notice when you're halfway there is really the key. And then look there again to make sure you're the other half of the way there, and then you might still have a bit. So very much my advice, not very helpful, but is eyes open, attention to detail, or you'll very easily miss it. Bonus Red Ledge Goggle questions. Of the four Army-produced clips, looks like two of them kind of science text, but the others do not. I'm curious about Disruptive Shot also not being scientific. If it's not counting as intentional, though, feel free to disregard the question. Disruptive Shot should, I believe, But Shotgun Blast should not. There might be another one that I'm missing in there, but Shotgun Blast. So Disruptive Shot should be counting properly now. And Shotgun Blast should not count because it is. You can get it from drops also. So. That's why. If I'm missing another one in addition to that, to those two, let me know. Next one is likely RNG mixed with confirmation bias, but the only way I'll know is to ask. It pertains to the Hunger use with regard to the Toxic Lash. Looks to me like if total melee and ranged power, the item fed into the ooze meets or exceeds the threshold value, one or two item instances of Toxic Lash are queued. Additionally, as more instances of the technique are learned, the threshold value increases. It also looks like some items appear to have a bonus to the value assigned to them based on total energy to craft them. Where data collection would take a fair number of resets and a good chunk of time, I figured asking if I was at least in the ballpark would be prudent. I would say that you are in the ballpark. You're sort of in, you hit it, but it's over there. Ball over there, yes. what do they call it? I think it's ball, right? Like strike, ball. Yeah, so ball off to, the right-hand side. So you hit. You're not totally crazy, but you need to refine your thought process. It's about as helpful. I'm not going to say it's as helpful as I can be, but I think that's as helpful as you probably want me to be. Is there any way to fight the Midgard mining drone? I don't want to jump on too many questions about the mining helmet just yet. I let people sort of explore on their own, so to speak. But what I can say, unrelated to mining helmets, that's not the last thing that you've seen of those drones. They're sort of old and crotchety, but they're still around, so you might run into another one of those in the future. Is there some special reason why Chance of Mining Encounters doesn't show up on the Bonuses tab? No. I have no idea what you're talking about. I am not uploading new version of that script so that it works properly. It's actually kind of weird. It was working fine when the item launched. I must have rolled it back somehow. But it should be working fine now. Any chance the links you get to other sites when you relay somebody's site could be listed in alphabetical order? Huh. I guess I don't see any reason why not. Maybe? Might be harder than it sounds like. That's actually kind of a giant pain. I might get around to that eventually if you remind me, but I'm definitely not going to do that on the air. And as a general rule of thumb, interface questions for sure are probably better handled through bug reports or in-game messages rather than podcast questions. Admittedly, I told to just fix the last one. So that said, I will try to remember to take a look at that, but I don't think it'll be trivial by any means. Okay, well, I think that's it. So, thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks for playing, and thank you very much for donating. And, you know, I don't think I got any questions the entire time about candy or Easter eggs or people coming back from the dead. I'm very disappointed with everyone who didn't know that this was going to be come out on Easter for not having appropriate thematic questions. Well, I guess I'll just have to, you know, cry myself into a Benadryl haze and sleep. Sleep sounds good. Okay, so thanks very much, and I will be working mostly on Old Town. There might be some other stuff coming up, but, you know, just like little dibs and dabs here and there until the big release, which will hopefully be sooner rather than later. Thanks, and have a great one.